We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
The New Orleans Pelicans select Zion Williamson.
And how about that triple penetration? So tough going to the goal.
Zion! High up on the rim to rip it down!
Welcome to In the Know, the Bourbon Street Shots Podcast. We're your hosts, Shamit Dua and Mason Ginsburg, and this is All Pelicans All the Time. Welcome to In the Know. This podcast is brought to you by our sponsors, Untuck It. So thank you, Untuck It. Mason, what is up? The Pelicans are winning, and they're winning without the Lakers' young core.
Oh, man. That was – I mean, that – okay, the core, I guess. And but, yeah, they hit one three games, or at least two, maybe three. No, just two, without any of the Lakers players.
Did they play in Charlotte? Who played in Charlotte? Brandon
Ingram? Ingram played in Charlotte. He was their lead.
Lonzo didn't. So how many games have we won without Lonzo?
All of them except for one.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, it's a good way to kick it off. That's not going to make anyone mad. The Lakers fans don't even listen to this, so who gives a shit? But, yeah, it's been fun. I caught the game live on Sunday against the Warriors with the half-full rosters of each team. That was a great time. Redick was on fire. Nice. Jackson Hayes in the lineup. I think his dad was at the game too, and he looked good. I don't want to say this team is turning a corner or anything, but because the teams they've played haven't been good. I mean, the teams they've beaten haven't been good. Charlotte is like they're worse than their record, I think. And I think that's actually started to show more recently. Golden State and Portland are – Golden State's trash. Portland didn't have Dame. The Clippers win was obviously pretty wild. But besides that, I mean, I don't know. How much are you taking out of these wins recently?
It seems like the Pelicans are on this unreal string of, like, how can we play the most beat-up teams possible? So, you know, Charlotte being Charlotte, whatever, meh. The Clippers, yes, they got Paul George back, and yes, he was kind of ridiculous. 37 points in 20-ish minutes or however many minutes he played, that was absurd. They were missing Kawhi. They were missing Pat Beverly. and Drew Holiday rocked out on both ends of that game. Paul George looked like a little baby in the fourth quarter going against Drew. And then they played the Warriors. They played the Heat, who were also really deprived, but clearly still better. I mean, Jimmy Butler was still healthy. Bam Adebayo was still healthy. So,
dude, they've played the Rockets twice this season, massively shorthanded, and they've almost won both of them.
Yeah, that's been interesting. Although I think that's more of a product of the Rockets' early season just not being as good as they can be, but still they have the second best record in the league.
They're still good.
Really good. And then the most recent game, which they played last night against Portland, they also won. I'm sure Damian Lillard not playing had to do a little bit with it, but it was a pretty comfortable win, and it was kind of close in the half, and then the Pelicans pulled away.
Yeah, so I was on a flight last night, missed the game, and I haven't had the chance to watch it. And this, unlike the last time I watched the replay, when it was one of the pathetic losses that the Pelicans had. I think it was Brooklyn or Toronto. I can't remember which one. No, it was Toronto, where people said don't watch, and I'm an idiot, and I watched anyway, and it was a disaster. But I do want to catch this Portland game, maybe after this podcast. But tell me about the game from what you saw. I mean, did the Pelicans just treat CJ the same way they treated Dame in the playoffs?
Well, first of all, it was Carmelo Anthony.
I saw that box score. It was beautiful.
The game was just as beautiful as the box score. Let me tell you that. The very first possession of the game, CJ brings the ball up the court. Hassan Whiteside is in the high post around the free throw line area. Throws an entry pass to Hassan Whiteside. Melo was in the low post trying to post up Kenrich Williams. Hassan Whiteside throws maybe the worst entry pass I've ever seen, and we have Etwan Moore on this team. Kenrich Williams fronts Carmelo Anthony, who is trying to post up. That is the Blazers' first possession of the game, is a Carmelo ISO post up.
High efficiency look.
And Kenrich Williams immediately steals the ball, easily, I would say. And it leads to a Pels bucket on the other end. But that was how the game started for Carmelo. That was how the game went for Carmelo. And I, for the life of me, could not understand why the Blazers repeatedly try to post this dude up and isolate him. All this talk about, oh, we need you need us, and Melo's like, I'm trying to get back in the league, and things are going to be different this time. I didn't see none of that. It was just, this is the same old Melo, and this is just not effective basketball. Kenrich, I think, stole the ball from him, trying to post up two or three times, and then drew two or three charges in addition to that, and caused several turnovers, just because Melo is Melo. And at this point, he's predictable. But yeah, I think the Pelicans, as far as how they treated CJ, it was not dissimilar. They definitely wanted to get the ball out of his hands. They definitely were chasing him off the three-point line and taking him away from the ball as much as they could. But they didn't have to do that too much because none of the other Blazers were big threats anyway. Yeah. So they could just kind of put Drew on CJ if they needed to, or whoever was on the court at the time, and kind of leave it alone, do their thing. Hassan Whiteside, let me tell you, this guy is just a flat-out terrible basketball player. I do not care about what kind of stats he puts up. I do not care how many blocks he puts up. He is the center version of Julius Randle in the sense that you watch this dude, and you're like, oh, my God, you have no clue what you're doing on defense. You just don't even try. Your offensive points aren't plus positive value offensive points. You're just scoring because you're tall and you're there. And it's just amazing how this dude has paid that much money and has had the reputation he had as a shot blocker when he's just bad. He's really bad.
I mean, he did it right, man. Well, I'm not going to say did it right, because he was borderline out of the league and then came back for a year, put up crazy stats. I'm not even sure he was materially different from the way you just described him. He probably tried. I don't remember back when, but his big contract year. But he definitely tried harder. He wasn't any more coherent on the defensive end. But I mean, how does it, that's basically the consensus from what I've read about this game was Melo was bad. His plus minus was terrible. And Whiteside just does not care about basketball, period. Like, he's just like, doesn't, he makes, I think that's a discredit to Julius Randle, the thing you just said. And that's saying something.
Yeah, Julius is the least efficient and useful on the offensive end. You know, Whiteside, I just don't understand what his use is in the NBA game. He's going to have research in like Dwight Howard or something. That's probably going to be his future if he stays around after his next contract, because he's also kind of a head case. So, yeah, Whiteside was thoroughly unimpressive. But on the flip side, ooh, I didn't do that intentionally. Jackson Hayes has been killing it. You got to see Jackson Hayes in person. What were your thoughts on that at the Warriors game?
Well, I think he's come. It's not fair to say he's like improved leaps and bounds defensively. I think some of it, you made the point of small sample sizes and how he was god awful at defending the rim on a field goal percentage basis at the start of the year, and now he's been way better. But I do think that he has certainly come a long ways in just catching up to the speed of the NBA game. Obviously, he doesn't have the body yet to really stay with bigger guys down low in the paint and not get pushed around a little bit, but he's using his athleticism the right way already. I don't think he's not just trying to make highlight reel blocks or anything like that. He's done a couple of them, but I don't think like that's what his mindset is. I think he's actually like trying to play good team defense, stay within the concept of what they're trying to do, and not just pile up stats, which is, I mean, you see that frequently, not just from rookies, but guys in the first few years in the league, they're just looking out for themselves, trying to get their own numbers. And I don't think that's what Jackson Hayes is doing. And it seems like he's truly buying in. And again, defense comes with practice. It's not, your athleticism only gets you so far on that end of the floor. But then, I mean, on the offensive end, he's the finisher. I mean, he's doing things that no one else on this team is capable of doing, really. I mean, Zion hasn't played, but apart from Zion, he's got all these, he's done all these things that really no one else has done so far.
Yeah, I think there has been noticeable improvements in many areas since even Summer League. And I want to talk about a few of them. Here's some things I've noticed that really stand out. Number one, I think what jumps off the screen the most is his ability to set picks. In Summer League, he simply did not make contact with the defender. He would look to slip as often as possible. He would be out of position. There'd be no advantage to him just coming up to the ball and trying to set a screen. He makes contact on his screens now, and he doesn't quite have that hefty frame that's really going to deter too many people, but it creates a meaningful amount of space that allows guys like Drew to really get downhill, or guys like JJ to come off and get a clean look off a handoff or clean look off a screen and have the time they need to shoot the three. That's been a huge improvement. The second improvement I've noticed is his boxing out. When the shot goes up, he actually looks to box out and then goes after the rebound. It seemed like in Summer League and in college, in large parts, he just didn't know what to do when the shot went up. And that's why like all his rebounding numbers were poor. Obviously, it goes hand in hand with his strength and him still being a large baby giraffe. But he didn't box out. He's boxing out. He's putting a body on his defender and making sure he's in position. And if he doesn't get the rebound, someone like Kendrick will. That, to me, is really impressive. And then defensively, I think he's improved leaps and bounds from the first time we played the Warriors, where he was just running around like he had no clue what to do on defense. And I think part of that was the scheme being a little bit weird and new and confusing. And I think the Pelicans have really simplified how they defend the pick and roll. And I think that plays to his strengths and it plays to his newness, because him being allowed to hang back a little more, one, allows him to see the play developing. It gives him a little bit more time to make a judgment. Two, he's a threat. People realize he is a vertical threat, so trying to go over him is a little bit of a daunting task, and he has the foot speed and athleticism to recover and play the in-between game with the role man and the ball handler, play two, as coaches sometimes like to call it. He has the athleticism that's necessary to do that, and he's been doing largely fine in terms of positioning and rotation and being in the right spots. He's not, I wouldn't say he's like a world-beating defender at the moment or like a world-beating rim deterrent, but I think he is on the track to getting there, and the progress he's made in such a small amount of time is paying dividends for the Pelicans, because you can play him and not be worried about him being completely out of place.
Yeah, and I think one thing you didn't mention that I think bears mentioning is, again, small sample size here, but he stopped fouling all the time. And this is something that usually takes time to come around as a big man, a rookie big man, but who's supposed to, you know, be a above average defensive player, or really any big man that's trying to give any kind of effort on the defensive end. Is, you know, his first four regular season games that he played, he had 3 fouls in 24 minutes. 4 fouls in 9 minutes. That's just truly impressive work against the Denver Nuggets. 4 fouls in 9 minutes, that's something. And then he goes 5 fouls in 14 minutes and fouls out in 16 minutes against the Brooklyn Nets. That's his first four games in the NBA. 18 fouls in, like, I don't know, 60 minutes. Since then, he's only had over 2 fouls in a game once. And he's been playing an average of 20-ish minutes per night. He played 2 minutes in the game against the Rockets, which kind of skews things. But, I mean, he's been not leaving his feet as much, and that's something that can take years. There are veterans in this league who are good defenders who still bite on pump fakes. Anthony Davis still does it. I mean, these guys don't have to. I mean, it's just something that you have to it takes discipline and really a mental effort to think about. It's like, you are 7 feet tall with the crazy wingspan. Stand up straight. Put your hands up, and you're going to alter a ton of shots without fouling. And he's already picking up on that, I think.
You know what I think might have been the crystallizing moment?
What's that?
There was a moment late in the Clippers game, I think it was the fourth quarter, where Lou Williams got the switch he wanted on Jackson Hayes. And on back-to-back plays, he pump-faked, got Jackson up in the air, and jumped into him, drew a foul. The first time he did it, three vets on the Pelicans immediately came running to him. I think it was Drew, Melly, maybe Etwan Moore. They were like, come on, bro, just don't do that. Second time, it happens literally 30 seconds after. It's back-to-back plays, and it's like – and Jackson realizes it. He's like, oh, no, what did I just do? Like, come on. And I don't think he's ever fouled ever from that moment onwards. He's clearly fouled since that moment onwards. But I think his foul rate has been dropped immensely since that moment, and I wonder if that's just something that's really stuck to him and he's just gonna become more conscious from now on, or if this is, we're just kind of seeing like a good stretch from him.
Yeah, that play, Drew tweeted out the video of it, the block on Carmelo Anthony. It reminded me in a weird way, do you remember that picture that kind of went viral with Carl Anthony Towns against Boogie, and Boogie's just kind of standing there as like like just weighing like a ton, and Towns is trying to move him, but he can't. That's kind of in a weird way how that block for Jackson Hayes of Carmelo felt to me, even though it's a totally different context because Jackson's the little opposite of Boogie in terms of mass. But it kind of felt that way. Melo just like, he was trying so hard against this rookie who's played 10 games in the NBA, and Jackson Hayes had no problem just like stopping him.
Yeah, that's honestly incredible. I mean, there was moments last night where like Whiteside literally bent him in half and just threw him out of the way. But Hayes is battling, man. He's not shy to do that stuff. And I wonder if that's the football player in him. But I don't like continually trying to bash Anthony Davis, but that's not something Anthony Davis likes to do. Mm-hmm. And it's not something he would have liked to have done as a rookie, to take that much contact. And the fact that Hayes just knows who he is and what he's there to do is really promising, because I think he's going to be a monster in 2 to 3 years. Going to be unstoppable.
They have very, as rookies, their body types are incredibly similar. And Jackson Hayes is like, yeah, I'm going to play center. Let's go. So at least we got that now.
Well, you know, he's like, he's 6'11", but he calls himself 7 foot. You listen to an interview, he's like, yeah, I'm 7 foot and blah, 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 blah. And Anthony Davis, he's like, I don't want to be listed as 7 foot.
KD did the same thing, or I think it was KD, except because his height made him a big instead of a wing, and he wasn't about that.
I just think that the stuff Griff said on draft night about the Pelicans want to have the most athletic front court in the NBA, like, that shit was not just smoke. Like, that was he wasn't trying to gas up his players. That's going to be a real thing. The Pelicans are going to be extremely tough to deal with Zion and Jackson Hayes in the future.
Yeah, and I said it on draft night, and I still think there's a jump shot coming. I mean, he shot decently well at Texas, and I think the three-point range will come with time. Again, not something that he should be relying on heavily, but I think his stroke as a rookie is nicer than, like, AD's was, for example, for sure.
Oh, yeah, there's already, like, clips of him at practice just nailing jumpers and looking really fluid, and I think – right now, he's smart not to try to incorporate that in his game. I mean, you look at even late clock situations. If he's caught kind of in a no-man's land, he's immediately looking for a dribble handoff and a rescreen so he can roll and dive. Like, he's playing very, very well within the offense, and he knows where his strengths are. So that's impressive, but it's also going to be impressive as he gains more freedom. And here's the thing that I would like my bigs to develop more than a jumper, and that's something I'm always going to stress, is a handle. The ability to put the ball on the floor for 1 to 2 dribbles. Because I think if Jackson Hayes develops these 1 to 2 dribble moves, he's going to be devastating. He catches something in a short roll. He only needs a step to dunk it, you know? So if you give him the ability to make 1 dribble, all of a sudden he just needs a dribble from the three-point line, and he's dunking it. And so I think those things are going to open up his game in a way that a jump shot would also definitely help. But you don't want him being a set shooter, I think. Him being able to put the ball on the floor is a little bit more valuable in the short and in long run.
Yeah, I agree with that. And it's the trick there is it may sound weird, but I feel like that's the more difficult skill to learn because it requires an element of coordination and also being as tall as he is. I mean, you've got more space between your dribble hand and the floor, which also makes it challenging to not turn the ball over. And so it's especially for these guys like Hayes, and AD is an exception here because AD was a guard until high school. He had the growth spurt, but with Jackson, I mean, it's not something that's intuitive. You never had to do it your entire life. You're always the big man. Just go dunk. I mean, so to learn something like that, where you really have never or very rarely had to ever be asked to do something like that. Whereas shooting, you're always in the gym shooting, you know? So I think it takes a lot more work and, but if you can get there, I agree. It's a real nice skill to have as a big man. The holidays are almost here, and you know what that means? Gifts. What better gift to give the guy in your life than a stylish shirt that fits just right? Unlike most brands, Untuckit shirts are actually designed to be worn untucked. Untuckit shirts always fall at that just right length, no matter his size. So he looks casual and sharp. You ever had that experience where you're leaning back and stretching, and all of a sudden you look at your sleeve and you notice, yep, the elbow's ripped? Well, I got good news for you, because with more than 50 plus fit combinations, Untuckit shirts look great on tall, short, slim, and athletic guys of all ages, and they fit right too. So whether you're shopping for the perfect holiday gift or just trying to craft a smart, relaxed style of your own, Untuckit is the way to go. Visit untuckit.com and use code BLUE for 20% off at checkout. That's untuckit.com and promo code BLUE for 20% off.
I want to move on from gushing about Jackson Hayes to gushing about J.J. Redick, who, as you mentioned earlier in the podcast, has been an absolute flamethrower.
I like this trend. Last podcast, we gushed about Kenrich Williams for like 10 minutes, 15 minutes. Now let's do Jackson Hayes and J.J. Redick. I'm about it.
Yeah, I think and I think you said it first, maybe, it's not a coincidence that J.J. Redick is finding his stride as Derek Favors was finding his stride. It sucks that Favors got hurt again. But two, J.J. and Jackson Hayes, who was able to do a lot of those things that Favors was doing in terms of dribble handoffs and screens, that combination is working well. But the Pelicans finally look like they can find shots for this man, and he is absolutely knocking them down. I mean, like, if he shoots off a dribble handoff, off a screen, that little curl, I am shocked if it ever misses. I'm not sure if I've ever seen him miss that. And not only that, he's just extremely crafty at drawing these fouls and getting to the line and just making opponents feel silly.
Yeah, he's it really seems like they're, and credit the team and the coaching staff both for getting him in better positions to find open looks. He's also doing a lot of himself, to your point about he's just running around. I saw someone say on Twitter, I don't know if it was you or not, said, you know, Redick's making me tired just by watching him play. It's because he's always on the move. You know, it's been fun to watch. I thought it was so funny. I was catching up on the Bourbon Street Shots group chat this morning, and I missed it by a couple hours, so I didn't say anything. But McNamara said something about how people are getting in his way and getting to spots that he needs to be in. And I said the same thing a couple days ago about how, you know, Redick, the only guys standing in Redick's way are teammates, younger players who really don't know where they're supposed to be on the floor. And one guy like Kenrich, I think is who he mentioned, but there's been others too, who we look for Redick and who otherwise would be open, but another Pelicans player kind of drifted out to the same area he was occupying and now he's no longer open. And so that takes time, but the fact that Redick is still just kind of been incendiary and always finding the open space on the floor, despite that, has been really cool to watch. It's nice to have a veteran like him.
Absolutely. And again, he's the type of person that's leading by example, but it's cool to see that Redick has found his stride. Drew is finding his stride. And Favors was finding his stride before this recent back injury. The injuries have just been brutal for this team.
Yeah. Yeah, so mostly brutal, right? There's been one that may have slightly been a blessing in disguise.
Has there?
I don't know. I mean, I hate to ever call any injury good, because they're not. They're bad. Hot take, injuries are bad. However, it's forced different approaches to rotations. And I feel like people know by now, I'm probably talking about Lonzo Ball. But I think it's, you know, it forced JJ into the starting lineup, and JJ next to Drew, and like you said, next to either Favors or Hayes as well, has been pretty solid. And I am very curious, and this is probably something we'll address later, but I'm curious to see how things change when Lonzo gets healthy. But what's you have a thought on just kind of looking backwards, that the impact that Lonzo's injuries had?
I think the impact Lonzo's injury has had has been more so on Drew, and Drew finding himself as a lead ball handler. And I don't care. Whoever wants to yell at me can yell at me and tell me that Drew isn't a point guard and Drew isn't this and Drew should be off the ball. I don't care. You can feel that way. You're not going to change my mind. Drew is, in my eyes, always going to be at his best on the ball, driving to the rim, using a high screen to do it, and then creating for himself or others out of it. Now, he is not in like the type of point guard Chris Paul is that's like really going to manage the game for 48 minutes and have the ball on a string. No, but he is the type of guard that you need the ball in his hands, whether you get it to him coming off a screen so he can already be going downhill, or you just let him create off of a standard pick and roll. But at his best, that is what Drew is. And I think in situations in the past where when you had Boogie come in and Boogie was taking on a lot of this creation responsibility because Boogie is Boogie. Drew struggled to find a spot because it took him a while to get used to doing these things where he's used to having the ball in his hands. Same thing with this season. Ingram's a new face. Lonzo's a new face. And the expectation with Lonzo is that Lonzo Ball is your point guard and he is setting up the offense. And Drew not knowing where his shots are coming from, because again, in the half court, I strongly believe that Lonzo wasn't being effective as a creator. And so I think that hurt Drew, one, because he would try to create some of his own shots at irregular times and they wouldn't be in rhythm. And he'd be like, okay, I just need a shot and I need to go do something. And, oh, I'm the leader of this team, so I need to like quiet the opponent run by doing something. And he'd just take bad shots. Didn't allow him to get into rhythm. And two, like, this idea of like not knowing whether he should drive and create or he shouldn't, I think it put him out of place. So I think that's the effect that Lonzo's injury has had, is allowed Drew to be Drew, or but also forced Drew to be Drew, be like, all right, dude, snap out of it, go do something. So yeah, that's my thought.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that makes sense. And you started talking about Drew a little bit and letting Drew be Drew, but at the same time, I don't want to be the negative guy here, but what, as far as offensive efficiency, Drew still hasn't been the guy he was last year. So I think he's definitely taken steps in recent games, and it seems like he's starting to get the rust off. And his game against Clippers was phenomenal, but he's got And I know that a couple of games also, he was the only guy. I mean, everyone else was injured, and he was the guy to focus on for the opposing defense. But at the same time, I mean, this isn't the – I feel like we got accustomed to seeing fairly efficient Drew last season, and maybe I'm just having recency bias here, but it doesn't feel like – it still doesn't feel like he's there yet.
I think that's been a product of, again, him just not going to the rim as aggressively as he did last year. And his finishing being off because he's being hesitant. And I think that stuff is coming. I think you're seeing more of that. And I think as, again, he starts utilizing the pick and roll more in his offensive repertoire, he's going to get out there and start being the Drew that he's used to being. But I think a lot of that's just been struggles at the rim, both in terms of knowing when to shoot it and two, just being uncharacteristically off in terms of finishing. I've seen him blow like layups that he gets normally. And I think that stuff will come.
Yeah. Want to talk about Phoenix? That's the next game we got. We got a couple. So we're playing Phoenix Saturday, and then what's the next game after that? I just had the schedule.
It's LA. So it's Phoenix, and I'm pretty sure it's both LAs, and then it's
Phoenix, Utah, LA. So the Clippers. 3-game road trip, and then back home to play the Lakers.
Okay. So this road trip, let's discuss this road trip and then call it a wrap.
Yep.
The Suns are up next, and they've already ruled out – what's his face? Favorite. Australian dude.
Oh, them.
What?
I was going to say the Pelicans have ruled out Favors.
Oh, no. The Suns. The Suns have already ruled out Aaron Baines.
Which is like their best player this year, right?
So. Yeah, he's been absurdly – he's just been this like rim-protecting, three-point flinging, rebounding Australian dude. That's what he's been. It's been like Bogut on steroids. But he's been really, really good for them, especially with Aiden going down. Ricky Rubio is questionable for tomorrow. It's unclear whether he's going to play. And again, it's one of those situations where – Devin Booker works better when he has someone that he can share ball handling duties with. Yep. But I don't necessarily think more Devin Booker is a good thing for the Pels. Like, that's a guy that you definitely want to watch out for.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But the Pelicans, Lonzo and Ja are questionable for tomorrow. Everyone else, Favors, Hart, Zion, Miller are out. So the starting lineup, I think, probably still going to be JJ, Drew, JJ, Ingram, Kenrich, and Jackson Hayes, who I think if Baines is out, the Suns' best big is Cheick Diallo.
Oh, man.
I don't know. I think Frank Kaminsky is out. Kellen Olson says injury report still has Frank Kaminsky and Dario Saric as probable. Oh, never mind.
Probable? Did you say probable?
Yeah, they said probable. They said probable. Okay. But, you know, Frank Kaminsky will be a tough cover for Jackson Hayes because he's a stretch big, but it'll allow Melly to play more minutes. But on the other end, Frank Kaminsky running with Jackson Hayes will be a funny sight.
Yeah. And then who plays point for the Suns if Rubio doesn't go?
Devin Booker.
They put what's his name? The Tyler Johnson alongside him?
I guess. That the move? I guess.
Yeah. Huh. Well, that'll be fun.
Okay. I just want to see more Cheick Diallo. I want to see Cheick Diallo revenge game, and everyone could be like, we shouldn't have gotten rid of Cheick Diallo.
Oh, God.
We should have kept playing him more.
Yeah, which is
to be fair, you were always on the Cheick train last year.
I mean, yes. however, I don't think it's controversial to say that after the AD trade, there was like nobody on that roster who Cheick was even borderline better than. Like when you're trying to figure out if you want to clear a roster spot by cutting either Kenrich Williams or Ja Okafor, neither Diallo's not better than either of those guys, and it's not hard decisions. But yeah, I didn't think his career was dead. So we'll see. I'm all for the Cheick Diallo revenge game as long as the Pelicans get the win.
Yeah, Kelly Oubre versus Kelly Oubre on Zans, a.k.a. Brandon Ingram, is going to be a fun matchup. I don't know why. I don't think people are going to get that reference. In any case, that'll be a fun matchup. I think the Pelicans should win this. I really do. Mm-hmm. I know the Suns have been better this year. I know they have Monty. I know they're playing harder. I think the Pelicans should beat them.
Yeah, I mean, and also in recent games, the Suns have kind of – and this may coincide with injuries a little bit, but they've kind of fallen back down the earth. I mean, they've lost four of their – like, they haven't beat a good team since Philly, and that's a great win, obviously, but they lost to the Heat by 16. They crushed the Brooklyn Nets, who have been not very good this year. I don't even know if Kyrie played. Actually, he probably played that game. And then they lost to the Lakers, beat the Atlanta Hawks, who have been horrible recently. They went to L.A. and probably just partied all weekend and got crushed twice by the Clippers and Lakers. And then they've lost to the Celtics and even Kings. The Kings have actually been pretty good recently. But so, I mean, it's not like they've done a lot recently, even though they had a hot start. And I know Baines, Ayton, but they're missing guys just like the Pelicans are. But I'm not, it's not a game I'm overly concerned about, but I am giving the Suns respect. I mean, they're 7-6 for good reason. They're not fluky 7-6, I don't think.
I think they are. We just send doubles at Devin Booker and he'll be fine.
Yeah, apparently he isn't like working out of those. So.
So the next the next game is the Utah Jazz, who have been oddly not very good. Yeah. They're still a good team, but they're like not fantastic. They are having trouble with rebounding and other areas that they generally don't have trouble with. So that's been interesting. I think that game will depend on if Mike Conley is going to be a good Mike Conley or a bad Mike Conley.
He's been kind of a bad Mike Conley for most of the year this year.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, Pel's on the get-right team, so I'm sure he'll make, like, six threes and score 32 points or whatever. But the Jazz have been awful when Gobert or Mitchell sit. So if there's ever a time for this so-called depth on the Pelicans to shine, it's against the Jazz bench.
This is something, right? So the Jazz are playing Minnesota right now. Donovan Mitchell is minus 12 in 13 minutes, and Conley is plus 16 in 10 minutes. I'm not trying to evaluate either player on that, but for that to be the case for two starters in the first half, to have that staggeringly different plus minuses is kind of wild. Which obviously leads me to believe they're staggering those guys pretty significantly. And I don't know if that's a trend this year, but that'll be interesting to see how they work with those two.
I'm not a fan of – I hope Favors is back for that game, to be honest. I'm not a fan of Jackson Hayes working with Gobert.
Yeah.
I think that's one where Jackson Hayes is – amazing athleticism won't necessarily give him a huge edge. Hopefully Favors is back for that game. That'd be fun. It'd be a good little homecoming for him. But, you know, I think with Donovan Mitchell, with Drew on him, it's possible that he doesn't have a great night. It just, can the Pelicans contain Mike Conley? I think that'll be a game where if Ingram is on fire from mid-range, the Pelicans will have a good chance.
Yeah, I mean,
I think the Jazz forced the highest or second highest percentage of like mid-range shots.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I'm really curious too. And I didn't even realize that the Jazz are no longer starting Joe Ingles. That game was a surprise to me.
Ingles has been bad this year.
Yeah, I mean, I only recently realized the guy was like over
Jeff
30
Green has been better. Yikes.
That's not good. But I totally had no clue that Joe Ingles was older than me. That was a shocker to me this summer.
That Joe Ingles is older than you?
Yeah,
he looks like a middle-aged math teacher. How is that a shocker? Like, how old do you think you are? Shit.
I mean, I just didn't. The guy. Just I guess I just default to how long a guy's been in the NBA, and it totally didn't hit me that he came over to the NBA after he, like, I guess I know with like Melly because the Pelicans signed him, but yeah, that's something I should have known earlier, and because I was shocked at the contract he got, and I was like, oh wait, this guy's
old. It looks like someone you'd find in like bumfuck Idaho shooting up heroin. Like that's what Joe Ingles looks like.
I have no response to that.
I'm sure Jazz fans will appreciate that.
Yeah.
And I'm sure Joe Ingles will repay me by hitting like 7 threes. Him and Mike Conley are going to combine for 13 threes against the Pelicans.
Yeah, that's par for the course.
Okay, the final game, the Clippers. Maybe a chance for both Paul George and Kawhi to play against the Pelicans. Not looking forward to that one, to be honest. I think the Pelicans winning one against the Clippers is pretty big.
Yeah.
I think that's if they can, if on this road trip, the Pelicans, my expectations, the Pelicans go 1-2. The Pelicans go 2-3 in any sense. I consider that a massive win.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, they got 3 games in 4 nights. They got, and then Utah and LA are pretty brutal back to back. And on top of that, they go from Utah to LA on Saturday night. And I don't know if what that means.
It's as weird because it'll be like the first time for the young people to be in LA,
yeah,
like back in LA, but they're not playing the Lakers, so yeah, it'll be interesting. Which the Lakers game on Thanksgiving or close to Thanksgiving after that one is going to be, I think that one's up in the air because that game is going to be a game that the young core is going to get up for, and the Pelicans are going to have a crazy crowd and they're going to get up for. So that could be. Like, that's not, like, on paper, you're like, okay, like, the Lakers are better, they probably win. But that's a game that usually teams that get up for and really mark on their calendar. And hopefully it's exciting and there's a greater chance of an upset.
Yeah. I was just looking at the Clippers schedule to see if there's any chance they would rest anyone, but I don't think so. They got Boston tonight, they got Houston Friday, and then Pelicans Sunday, and then Dallas Tuesday. So pretty nicely spaced out. Tough schedule of the next 4 for the Clippers, but pretty nicely spaced out. So I would expect everyone to be a go for that one. And hopefully, to your point, I hope we get Favors back. I'd much rather see Favors play against if he only plays in one on that back to back. I'd much rather see him play in Utah. I just think that's a more winnable game. And the homecoming point's great. And I just think it'd be cool to watch him match up with Gobert. Fingers crossed, but the fact that he just got ruled out for Thursday, maybe it's just because they're saving him for the next game, but it doesn't bode well in my opinion.
Cool. That has been a wrap for the podcast. Thank you for tuning in and stay tuned for the next one we'll have this week. It'll be some extra content. Thank you.
Nobody builds 5G like Verizon builds 5G. Because we're the engineers who built the most reliable network in America. And the more you do with 5G, the more building it right matters. The more your network matters. The more Verizon engineers going the extra mile matters. It's us pushing us. It's Verizon versus Verizon. 5G built right from America's most reliable network. Most reliable based on rankings from RootMetrics second half 2020 U.S. report of 3 mobile networks. Results may vary. Award is not an endorsement.